Further questions, Commissioner? Ed, just want to look at anything.
Mr. McDonald?
Yes.
2 years ago, we listened, the Senate listened to Mr. Pecor, who's now scheduled to be Deputy Secretary of Interior, who was head of the Geological Department of the United States Department of Interior, an avowed expert on oil and gas, mm-hmm. federal government. Well, he's, mm-hmm. we personally heard him say, in the presence of the Senate and many of the whole, that in 2 years, he said there's going to be 2 to 3 pipelines, oil, probably 2 gas pipelines. This is from the North Slope alone. Mm-hmm. Just a month ago, there was an oil strike in west of Prudhoe, which admittedly wasn't very much gas, but it was another oil strike. Mm-hmm. You have the Colville River area. You have PET 4. You have the Candic area, where Phillips is supposed to be hotter mm-hmm. than a firecracker right near the Canadian border there. Mm-hmm. You've got pure gas fields that haven't been found yet.
That's right.
You've got new Canadian fields that haven't been found yet.
That's right.
And what I'm trying to get is, it seems like we never think big enough. This morning we had a meeting with the court system. They said we're going to build a court building that's 3 times too small before it's built. Now, what I'm trying to get at, and the question I'm asking you, and what was behind my original question on a large pipeline, is, are you thinking big enough, or are we thinking big enough in light of all these potential reserves?
Well, you're thinking exactly the way we're thinking, because that's our that's our thinking. But to come to you and try to and discuss this in the range of a 52-inch pipeline or a 60-inch pipeline is just we can't present it, because currently we don't know the cost of making the 60-inch pipe, nor we don't know the cost of making a 52-inch pipe in the quantities we're talking of here. Now, the Russians do make 60-inch pipe, but you can't find out how much it costs them to make it. And of course, cost may not be a big factor, you see.
Do your plans include maybe 2 pipelines, a 48-inch? I mean, I'm
what you would do in that case would be to... There are lots of reasons why you shouldn't have too big a pipeline. Because if you break a 60-inch pipeline with 4 and 4.5 billion cubic feet a day, that is a tremendous amount of energy that's going to be wasted, and somebody on the other end is going to be short, or relatively short, while you repair it. And there is a lot of argument as to the cost. It's one thing to put a 60-inch pipe in the ground, another thing to put a 40-inch pipe in the ground. There's the question of machinery to handle it, and all of that has to go into it. We have no experience on that. Right now, our thinking is that 48 inches would be and everyone is pretty well agrees with us on this at the moment for estimating. For instance, I don't know of any pipe mills in the United States currently that make larger than 48-inch plates. You need something in the order of 54 to 55, 56 inches to make a 48-inch plate.
They don't make 48 inches. You had to get it from Japan.
Well, currently, but I think... But I'm not sure I'm answering your question. We really believe that if your Kavak field, which we think is one of the bright spots in Alaska...
You think that's a bright spot?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We'd like to see a lot more wells drilled there sooner, right away. But is it economic to drill that until they know when they're going to sell the gas? You see, it's the chicken and the egg a bit.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to summarize this. What I'm trying to get at, do you think that there are considerably larger reserves than exist right now? If so, what are your plans about these larger reserves? That's right. Basically not the size of the pipe.
We, as far as the Mountain Pacific Group is concerned, we would move to the markets all the gas that can be found, and within economic, if it was 4 billion cubic feet a day, we would plan on moving it. We would either do it by 2 pipelines or
that's all,
or whatever it is. Yeah, let me make it clear, we have no small ideas about the capacity of the North Slope, both in Canada and the United States. I'm thinking of the Arctic regions as a whole. We think there is the hundreds of trillions of cubic feet available, not just 30 or 40 or something like that.
You think it's larger than the Near East in terms of...
Could be.
Both oil and gas?
Could be, but the reason is, that's a big question.
That's enough. Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Andy?
I have one, following up what Marty was after. What I really don't understand is how do you determine who is going to get the route, you might say? Are you in competition with these other people? And if so, what in what areas are you in competition with? I mean, are you making a presentation to somebody, and then this somebody will judge the presentation, or how is it determined who is going to get the route?
To build a pipeline in Canada, you must have this which is, covers more than one province. You must go to the federal authorities, which is the National Energy Board Act. Say there were three applicants. There are three people working on it now, and three of them apply. And the National Energy Board will have to come down with a decision, which could be knock their heads together and put them all together, or they could select one. And it would be tried just like a similar application for the Federal Power Commission. If you have two hydroelectric projects or two gas projects, two railways, the same thing.
And then you mentioned that you don't expect to be classified as a common carrier. What about the portion of pipeline that is in Alaska?
That would be under the control of the Federal Power Commission. And they would, currently, when you apply for a permit to move gas, you apply for the capacity of pipe which will move to the market which you intend to serve, which is related again to your source of supply, and that's all you're permitted to build now. You can't build for the future, not under the Federal Power Commission regulation, as previously, as applied up to date or until recent years anyway. Now similarly, this is a similar rule in Canada. You just can't afford to spend your money ahead of your capacity to use it. And it automatically means then that the people who come in at this end and come out at that end have that capacity dedicated to them. Newcomers then have to provide the financial capability of increasing the pipeline, which all you do is loop it. In other words, you duplicate it or add horsepower.
Further
question?
Marty?
Following up Andy's thing there. The determination, say, by the National Energy Board of who succeeds in building the pipeline, say, through Canada, how does this follow in the timetable with regard to your bidding with the companies? Do you succeed either individually or one company gets the purchase from all the companies? What comes first? Do you get the route, or does the National Energy Board make a determination that the three competitors will join in? And which comes first, your purchase from the oil companies of the gas, and then you turn around to the applicable agencies, the FPC and the National Energy Board? What's the timetable on that?
Well, usually you have your gas supply before you apply.
Okay.
The three competitors that are available here, we're talking about, all are dealing with the producers. Now, as somebody mentioned here, maybe one group will get one company contract to them, the others, and another company may contract with another group or something of that kind. And then both would have a gas supply and both would be in a position to apply to the National Energy Board or to the Federal Power Commission. They have to be coincidental, really.
But just two questions, not too late. Your chart showed two pump stations in Alaska for your first.
Yes, I believe they did.
Yeah. Okay. And you also mentioned where would you get your pipe? Will this be the United States
we
pipe?
Have no,
I thought
we
you
have
mentioned
no,
you.
We have no no commitment of any kind in regard to that. Chances are it would be made in several countries.
Further question?
Right. Assuming that the permit for the oil pipeline is issued by this fall, do you think with your present schedule with planning, assuming you're going to get the go-ahead from the Canadian government, from the FPC and so on, that you will be able to go online when gas becomes available from the North Slope to go online in economic quantities?
Well, we'd be close to it. I wouldn't envisage that you would flare, in other words, much gas before the pipeline would be finished. I think the gas pipeline possibly could be finished at the same time as the oil pipeline. It could, but it may be a year later, in which case you might repressure your gas or do something else with it in the meantime. But I think they wouldn't be a year apart. What do you think? Can there be any feeling on that? A year apart? Or?
Well, they certainly, I don't think they should be done at the same time because it's not economic. It's too big a drain on construction facilities and labor and plants and all sorts of equipment have to be provided, and call on this great mass of men and money and tools all at once is just simply not economic. I think that we should be built successively, one after the other. From an engineer's standpoint, that's the way it should be.
So how many years from the time it becomes available?
It will take
and
us
should be used until the time you can put it to market.
From the time we are legally in a position to proceed with construction, that is, we have the permits required from the NEB and the FPC and the various state and provincial authorities. From that point, we estimate it'll take us 2 years to complete and put our facility in operation.
So the answer is 2 years.
Keep it.
One other question.
I think this is on our schedule in this brochure.
You mentioned burying a pipeline that's going to have refrigerated gas, freezing gas, 32 degrees.
Yeah. Actually, it'll be a little bit less than that. We have to keep down around 27, I think.
Okay. What is the effect of putting a 27-degree gas flow in a zero-degree surrounding terrain? I mean, isn't this going to alter the ice structure at all in the permafrost?
Mm-hmm. No, no. Once you're below freezing, I don't think it changes. There's no effect. No.
You freeze me at zero, keep it in a locker. You try to freeze it at 28 degrees, and it doesn't last very long.
You're getting
a change in the structure. Yeah. There's a change in your ice structure too, according to how cold you get.
I can't answer that. I mean, I can't answer except that the general advice I get is that. The gas at 25 degrees, it will not, or should not, damage the permafrost. But I don't think it will personally. I might say this: that if the that once you get the gas underground, that it does remain at fairly even temperatures. You don't. It doesn't change. Once you get it, because it's going to have a cover of say 30 inches, so it's insulated.
Actually, there's some there's benefit here that doesn't meet the eye. We get about an 8% increase in throughput capability at the lower temperature.
So the cooler you get it.
No, it's not. It's not a linear relationship. But under those conditions, we'll have an 8% higher throughput capability than we would at 60.
Further questions? I have a few. I'm still not clear what the role of the Canadian National Energy Board is. As I understand it, you obtain a supply of gas and then you apply to them for a permit to construct the line to transport the gas. They control whether or not you can purchase from that supplier. They control the price at which you purchase and at which you sell. Is that correct?
No, they don't control the price. Which in Canada, there's no control of the price at which you purchase the gas. It's only the transportation cost that the National Energy Board controls. That's the cost of moving the gas, not the purchase price at one end. Now, if it's Canadian, if it's Alaska gas, then they wouldn't have any control over what's paid for Alaska gas.
Excuse me.
That's not of the Federal Power Commission.
There is, it is also required, though, that the NEB find that the sale of the gas at the price set forth and agreed upon between the parties is in the public interest.
What is the public interest in Canada in this regard? I assume that all of their decisions to date have involved the sale of Canadian gas.
That's right.
What this would be the Canadian public interest in the wellhead price of Alaska gas?
Oh,
there wouldn't be any, provided the sale of the gas was in the United States. It's entirely a matter of the Federal Power Commission. That's an offhand opinion. There may be some ramifications I haven't thought of, but That'll be my answer to that.
I take it that before you could even go as far as making a permit to the National Energy Board, you'd have to have your supply assured so that you could arrange such things as financing.
That's right.
And in that regard, the three groups that are involved in studying a gas route, only one of them involves producers on the North Slope, and that's the Northwest Project. And they have Atlantic Richfield, Humble, and Ohio involved. How could Mountain Pacific, why do you feel that you could get a contract from the gas producers on the slope when they are participating in another project?
Well, just simply they say that that does not involve a commitment on their part to sell the gas transport their gas to that particular project. They're contributing, as I understand the representations we've had from them, that they're contributing in order to get the studies completed and get it done, but they're not committed to that particular project. As far as we know, that no one is committed to anybody as yet, including those three.
The information that you furnished on the estimated transportation cost and its comparison to present market prices in the United States, I think that's on page 23. I'm sorry, page 25.
Yeah.
As I understand it, the figures on the left are your estimated transportation costs to Seattle, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. And on the right are the present prices at which gas in those areas is now selling to the consumer.
That's
and
right.
In all cases, your transportation costs are higher than the present selling price, which includes transportation costs plus wellhead price plus profit. What is it that makes you think that you can successfully market gas on the West Coast?
In other words, take the left-hand column and add the cost of gas in the field to it is really what you do. You see. In other words, the price in Los Angeles would be 54 cents plus.
So it'd be even higher than what Transwestern or El Paso puts it in it.
That is right.
Los Angeles now.
Well, except that the potential supply of energy to these markets indicates that the competitive energy would permit the sale of gas at this increased price in these areas.
Well, I take it that your assumption is there's going to be a substantial rise in gas prices in the United States in the next
few years.
That's controlled by the Federal Power Commission at this time.
That's right.
All right. So I assume you envision a change in their attitude because of the decreasing U.S. Mm-hmm. supply.
Yes, they have approved in the recently some contracts well in excess of 20 cents.
Wellhead price.
And they have their. It's just purely a matter of economics. Can they get the gas? Can they get the energy? And what they have to pay for it? And they have increased their. They've practically doubled the valuation of the supply situation in the last, I'd say, 24 months.
I assume that if you've made some estimates of the transportation cost to the West Coast, you must have made some estimate of the range of wellhead price. Because obviously the determination of whether you can market the gas has to involve that as well as your transportation cost.
Well, the answer to that we have had some figures, for instance, on LNG delivered from Ecuador, LNG delivered from Indonesia, potential cost from new discoveries in Texas and that type of thing. And having regard to the demand, it appears to us that you can pay a reasonable amount of money in the field and bear this transportation cost. Now, I wouldn't want to put a figure on it, but we believe that we can add a reasonable fuel price to these figures and market the gas in our area.
You mentioned the figure of 20 cents that had just been approved. Is that as the highest that you know of in the United States, the fuel price?
It's 22, actually.
22. Is that, for export from Texas, I mean outside of Texas, I think that is the highest in Texas.
Excuse me. There are higher prices, but not on the same basis. There are temporary emergency purchases going on.
Yeah. They don't involve substantial volume.
No, and they're for limited periods of time.
What is your wellhead price in the Liard region?
Depending on the quality of the gas, a pipeline quality gas is in that area is in currently worth about 18 cents. That's after it's been cleaned, and that's the cost of it to the West Coast pipeline of pipeline gas. Now, they don't pay the producer that. They pay them less, but they do the work. So it all depends on who does the work of processing the gas as to what the price is. But currently, gas in Alberta, which is, and BC, is worth about 18 cents for transportation out to San Francisco or to Minneapolis.
Has there been any indication from any of the producing companies as to when they will have gas ready for sale on the North Slope?
You know, this is tied up with the question as to when they're going to move the oil, get the oil produced.
Right, but has there been an indication from the date that oil commences to flow, what period of time it's going to be before they're ready to transmit gas?
That again, there hasn't been a, you've been more close to those particular negotiations, but there hasn't been a definitive statement on even that point. Now that is again is involved with the question of the overall question of the mechanics of moving the, of the joint use of oil and of gas, water drive, gas drive, and that type of thing. There has been no definitive statement by, as far as I know, by any of the producers as to exact planning, as to what they will do. We've tried to get that, but we haven't got it, and they haven't given it to us or to anybody else.
Just trying to get an idea as to the magnitude of the oil on the North Slope versus the magnitude of the gas. Assuming that there are 9 to 10 billion barrels of oil in reserve on the North Slope, somewhat less than that would be recoverable reserves. But assigning, say, just arbitrarily a figure, a wellhead value of $2 a barrel, if you estimate 5 to 10 billion barrels, there's potentially 10 to 20 billion dollars wellhead value of oil in the North Slope. If you use the figure of 20 cents for gas, and there's 26 trillion cubic feet there, the volume of the potential value of the gas is somewhere from a half to a quarter that of the oil.
Yes, that appears to be about the ratio of it.
You mentioned that there was that you could go to 4 billion a day, and I think that would come somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.5 trillion a year, and if there's 26 trillion, that's considerably less than 20 years of reserve.
We wouldn't. You would have to have more than 26 trillion. You'd have to have non-associated gas, possibly, or have a much larger oil supply than is presently contemplated. The round figures that you use are 1 to 10. In other words, you can move a billion feet of gas per day if you have 10 trillion cubic feet of reserves to support it. And you can move that for roughly 22 years on a deliverability basis and taper off for another 4 or 5 years. You don't gas, you from the day of initial production, you get maybe the first 5 years your gas will produce steady, and then it begins to taper off. any individual gas well starts to taper off, and you have to continue to drill additional wells in order to maintain the deliverability out of the field. And there usually that can be done for roughly 22 to 25 years on a 1 to 10 ratio.
I would assume from what you've said about the environmental problems that in your mind is not a very substantial part of this overall project.
No, I think I would say this, that the environmental problems are there, but the pipeline company has got to master them.
But no, I'm sorry, as compared to, say, the building of an oil line.
I'm sorry, yes. I think the environmental problems of the gas pipeline are less than they are with an oil pipeline. But I'm not an expert on oil, I must assure you. I only really know the handling of gas.
I wonder, though, in light of the original estimate of the oil line, which was $900 million, and the present estimate, which is more than revised estimate, which is $1.5 billion, in light of the environmental problems and greater knowledge or whatever, how reliable the estimates are on construction. I noticed that the according to the Arctic group, all of the estimated construction costs are pretty close together, but how current is that figure, and was it revised in light of Alyeska's experience with an oil line?
Do you know, Jim, would you like to?
Those numbers are accurate to the best of our ability, and they are projected for future construction, and they incorporate escalated costs, and they haven't been changed. And I think that our experience will prove that they're not more than 5% off one way or another.
As far as this question of the pipe is concerned, you indicated there, I assume, is some problem with getting in Canada and the United States a sufficient supply of 48-inch pipe at this time to build your line. Is that correct?
Well, no. No, I think if the market is there, that the pipe manufacturers in the United States and Canada would provide the facilities to build.
He said at this time.
At this time. I don't know as to how many mills would deliver 48-inch pipe. There has been some made in Canada this year.
Well, do you view that as a substantial problem, acquiring the 48-inch pipe?
No.
Okay.
No.
What, as I gather it then from what you said, the two major problems that you would be faced with was, one, the price of gas in the United States to make the project feasible, and when you can purchase gas on the North Slope for transmission. But those, is it correct to say you view those as the two biggest problems in this regard?
Determining the volume of gas and price is the biggest problem. Now, the volume of gas and the price in the field is the biggest problem, and the second problem is the second one as to the market price. That is that lies within the Federal Power Commission, and if we can satisfy them, then we have a project.
Couldn't tell whether they used any automatic welding process on the Transalpine line. What experience has Bechtel had with the automatic welding?
Longitudinal welding?
No.
Or circumferential welding? None that I know of. Automatic welding has been used in several different locations, but I don't know of any biggage line that's been welded automatically from one end to the other.
On the line that the Transalpine line, were there trained welders available for that, or were any of those people trained as welders?
Bechtel trains people to do the work. in the countries where we do build these things, surely. Not just pipelines, but every other aspect of the effort requires training. Automatic welding, in fact, this is employed, I think, generally throughout the world in the where you've got the double joint pipe, and you can have a fixed installation, and you can operate an automatic welding device under controlled conditions. This is very suitable for that location or that type of operation. But out on the line, I don't know of any big inch line that's used automatic welding. Do you?
No.
I don't know.
We have not used it.
Lone Star Gas did on a section of 40 inch line.
Was it?
Not right, Andy?
I don't know.
Was this that line that was laid down to Austin?
I don't know exactly where it was, in East Texas. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it started.
Well, I know Columbia used some of it over on the East Coast, too. And I think there was a 12-inch line that was laid with automatic welding equipment in Oklahoma. But this has been sort of an experiment, I think.
There are further questions from the committee?
Just one question. Marty? What it will be the percentage of the transportation cost according to your chart? I think you have 54 cents on to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That doesn't include the transportation cost.
No, that is the transportation
cost.
Only the transportation.
Oh, okay, fine.
You add whatever was paid the producer in Alaska, for instance, to that.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. Okay, thank you.
Further questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
May I say I appreciate very much your attention, and I hope I've been helpful.
It has been very interesting.